back in chapter 11 of Judges, and we're talking about Jephthah. Let me close these doors here. Can you get these? Thanks, Bobby. Remember last week we talked about the predicament that Israel had found themselves in and how they had repented, gotten rid of their idols, they had turned to the Lord, and how God had raised up a new judge named Jephthah. He was a man of valor. His brothers had... His mother was a prostitute, and his brothers from his father's wife, when they were all grown up, drove him away so he wouldn't inherit anything of the from his father. So he went to live in the land of Tov. And several people, several other men who were in similar situations as Jephthah joined up with him. Now, Gilead, which was where was the tribe in the and from where Jephthah was from, Gilead decided that they needed some help. So they go and get Jephthah. They didn't want him to inherit anything, but, you know, the boy could fight. So they were in a tough enough situation that they were willing to put all of that aside. They bring Jephthah back, and Jephthah sends messengers out. You see in verse 12, he sends messengers to the king of Ammon to talk to the king and basically do a little diplomacy before they actually had to go and fight them. And he asked the king of Ammon why they're attacking. And Ammon says, look in verse 13, the king of the children of Ammon answered the messengers of Jephthah, because Israel took away my land when they came up from Egypt, from the Arnon to the Jabbok as far as Jordan. Now, therefore, return them peacefully, talking about their land. And then Jephthah sent messengers back to the king of the children of Ammon. And from there on to through verse 22, Jephthah recounts Israel leaving Egypt and what they did and did not do, and basically tells the king of Ammon, look, we didn't take anything from anyone. And he gets to verse 23, and he says, so now, Adonai, God of Israel, dispossessed the Amorites from before his people Israel. So should you possess their land? Don't you possess what Chemosh, your God, gives to you to possess? Likewise, whatever Adonai, our God, has dispossessed from before us, this we will possess. Basically, if God has given it to us, we're going to live here. It's ours. You don't have any claim to it. And then down here in verse 27, he says, may Adonai, the judge today between B'nai Israel and the children of Ammon. However, the king of the children of Ammon paid no attention to the words of Jephthah that he had sent him. What we read here is an early account of exactly what's happening in Israel right now. It's exactly, and Jephthah's argument about why Israel has claim to the land is exactly the same argument that Israel has now about why they have a claim to that land. Okay, it's the land that God had given them. It's still the land that God had given them. Okay, and there are still Ammonites, just in a different form, who want that land back. So, that sets us up for what's going on here. In verse 29, then the Ruach, or the Spirit of the Lord, the Spirit of Adonai, came upon Jephthah. So he marched through Gilead and Manasseh and passed through Mizpah of Gilead. And from Mizpah of Gilead, he crossed over to the children of Ammon. The Spirit of the Lord comes on him just like the Spirit did on the other judges to enable them to carry out the work of God, to give them the power that they needed to do what God had for them to do. It's exactly the same thing that happens in the second chapter of Acts when the Spirit is given there at Pentecost so that they would have power, right? Jesus said the Spirit's going to come why? so you'll have power to be my witnesses. It's the same thing. He said, where we have an indwelling spirit, here the Spirit of God came on someone to do a specific task, a specific thing. And so the Spirit comes on him to enable him to have the power to go up against the Ammonites and to defeat them. But in verse 30, and this is probably what everybody has been waiting to get to on Jephthah. I read, so a friend shared something with me a few weeks ago. And says, I spent a great deal of my life realizing that I should have shut up 10 minutes ago. Not only does that apply to me for most of my life, and if you, the better you know me, the more you know that that's true. Isn't that right? But this is something that would apply to Jephthah right now. The Spirit of God came on him to do something. And that should have been enough. Jephthah would have done well not to say another word. Okay? But in verse 30 of chapter 11, then Jephthah vowed a vow to Adonai and said, if you will indeed give the children of Ammon into my hand, then it will be that whatever comes out of the doors of my house to meet me when I return safely from the children of Ammon, it will be Adonai's, and I will offer it up as a burnt offering. Jephthah has made a vow to God. If you will do this, I will do this. He spoke rashly. He spoke stupidly. In his attempt to twist God's arm to do what he wanted, he says something he never should have done. Jephthah sins in verse 30. And if we read through the rest of this in chapter 11, you'll see that God indeed did give Ammon over to Jephthah. He defeated him. That was God's plan all along. There was no need for him to say this stupid thing. That was God's plan all along. But God does do it. Now, in verse 34, Jephthah arrived at his home in Mizpah. Now, what was his vow? If you do this and I return safely, then whatever the first thing is that comes out of my house, that I will sacrifice as a burnt offering. Now when Jephthah arrived at his home in Mizpah, behold, his daughter was coming out to meet him with tambourines and with dances. Now she was his only child. Besides her, he had no son or daughter. Upon seeing her, he tore his clothes and said, alas, my daughter, you made me bow down in grief. You've made me miserable, for I have opened my mouth to Adonai, and I cannot take it back. Jephthah has put himself and his family in a terrible situation because of what? Because he opened his mouth. We really don't care about this too much. We really don't. Listen to how people speak to one another and about other people. Listen to how we speak. Listen to ourselves. How we speak about things. Not just what we say, but what we might write online about people. Because it's the same as speaking. You're just speaking in a different format. God says that life and death are in the power of the tongue. You see it, you will see played out vividly here. We know that every man will give an account for every idle word that has been spoken. Okay? Jephthah is fixing to give an account for an idle word. We really don't give a lot of weight to that. We really don't. We act like it doesn't matter. Especially, when we talk about the power that our tongue has, but we mainly think about, well, what we say about other people, or and that is part of it, that does matter. But we really don't comprehend the gravity of speaking idle words to God. And how important it is that we just don't throw things around with Him. If you go to, and let's talk about this whole vowel thing, because that it's important that we understand that. What do we know about vowels? First of all, Jephthah says this thing, I cannot take it back. And if you go, and Jephthah is basing this partly on Torah. If you go to Numbers 30, Numbers 31 and 2, Moses spoke to the princes of the tribes of Bnei Israel. This is what Adonai has commanded. Whenever a man makes a vow to Adonai or swears an oath to obligate himself by a pledge, Jephthah has obligated himself to God, okay? By a pledge, he is not to violate his word, but do everything coming out of his mouth. He is obligated. You have made a promise to God. Okay? Ecclesiastes. Let's go to Ecclesiastes 5. 5, 1 through 6. And really, Solomon sums it up very well here in Ecclesiastes 5, 1 through 6, the importance of what we speak before God. Do not be quick with your mouth nor hasty in your heart to utter a word in God's presence. For God is in heaven and you are on earth. Therefore, let your words be few. As a dream comes with excessive burden, so a fool's voice with too many words. When you swear a vow to God, don't delay in fulfilling it. For he takes no delight in fools. Pay what you vow. It is better for you not to vow than to vow and not to pay. Don't let your mouth lead your flesh to sin, and don't say before the messenger it was a mistake. Why should God be angry at your voice and destroy the work of your hands? Many dreams and many words are meaningless. Therefore, fear God. Lots of people have made vows. But breaking the vows has grave consequences with God. And just if you just look at the Bible, there are people who made vows and kept them. Okay? Hannah in 1 Samuel 1, she made a vow to God, if you give me a child, I will give him back to you. That was a vow. Okay? And she kept it. David, Psalm 22, verse 25, Psalm 56, 12, Psalm 61, 5, Psalm 65, 1. David was always making vows. David was always keeping his vows also. And David was not making weird vows like, whatever comes walking out of the house, I'm going to kill it and burn it. Okay? David wasn't making vows like that, but he did make vows to the Lord. Paul, if you want to get into some New Testament stuff, Paul in Acts 18, 18, Acts 21 and 24. Both of those vows were Nazarite vows that Paul made. And you can find the description of a Nazarite vow in Numbers chapter 6. And that's a vow that actually the what it meant to take that vow was set up by God. And that Nazarite vow was something that God established. And also Galatians 1:20. Paul makes a vow. 2 Corinthians 1:23, God makes a vow. You can also argue that in Acts chapter 5, the problem that Ananias and Sapphira had was because they made a vow and broke it. Okay? God has made many vows. If you do this, I will do this. Okay? But God has the ability to keep them. All of them. God also has the knowledge to know what He will do and what He won't do. But the breaking of a vow is a serious thing. It it holds grave consequences and something that we don't think about. And the Lord is telling us, the Old Testament tells us, don't take the making of a vow lightly. New Testament, Matthew 5, let's see here, Matthew 5, chapter 5, 33 and 37. This is where Jesus says, again, I have heard it, you have heard it said in days of old, you shall not swear falsely, but shall carry out your oaths to Adonai. I think that's in, he was paraphrasing Numbers. But I tell you, do not swear at all. Why? Because we have the uncanny ability to say stupid things. Do not swear at all, not by heaven, for it is the throne of God, or by the earth, for it is His foot, the footstool of His feet. It's His. It's not ours to swear on. Or by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great King. And do not swear by your head, for you cannot make a single hair white or black. You also can't control what the first thing is that comes out of your house. Okay? But let your yes be a yes and your no, no. Anything more than this is from what? What does it say? It is from, it says it's from the evil one. Okay? James. James basically says the same thing that Jesus says in Matthew. James 5:12. Let me see here. But above all, my dear brothers and sisters, do not swear either by heaven or by the earth or by any other oath, but let your yes be yes and your no be no, so that you may not fall under judgment. So, Jephthah has made this vow. And his daughter, for her part, on verse 36, she says, my father, you have opened your mouth to Adonai. She said to him, do to me what proceeded from your mouth, since Adonai brought vengeance on your enemies, the children of Ammon. She said further to her father, let this thing be done for me. Let me be alone 2 months so that I may go in the mountains and mourn my virginity, I and my companions. And he said, go. So he sent her away for 2 months. So she left, she and her companions, and mourned on the mountains because of her virginity. Then at the end of the 2 months, she returned to her father, who did with her according to his vow he had made. So she was never intimate with a man. So it became a custom in Israel that the daughters of Israel would go annually and to commemorate the daughter of Jephthah the Gileadite 4 days a year. Much like Isaac, Jephthah's daughter said, do with me what you will. You've made a vow. It is. We get upset for God not intervening in this. But does God intervene over every stupid thing that man does? No. No, he doesn't. I mean, on one hand, we say we want free will. We don't want to be robots. We don't want to be puppets. And on the other hand, we get mad when God doesn't make us a puppet. But God does not intervene in this. The sin in all of this isn't so much in the fact that Jephthah sacrificed his daughter. It's in that he opened his mouth to begin with. He set this whole thing up when he made this stupid thing. And why did he do it? Let's get that down to really the root of it. He's trying to twist God's arm to get what he wants. That's what lays at the root of this sin. It's like we've talked about before, where a lot of people treat God like a vending machine. God's my vending machine. If I'd put in my, well, however many quarters it takes now to get something out of it. But if I put my money in, I expect to get this out. Right? That's God's not a vending machine there for my pleasure. God's not there for me to manipulate to get the thing that I want. That's where this whole thing started. Yeah, if the sin came out of his mouth, but what was in his heart was, I'm going to persuade God to do what I want. And in that, it grew into this big sin. Could he have gotten out of the vow? Oh, yes, he could have. He could have. There is a way. There is a way. How many people in this room have done something that they never should have done and got God's forgiveness? Okay, good. I hope everybody acknowledges that we've all done something that we never should have done and we got God's forgiveness. Okay, God has always been standing there with his arms out to man offering forgiveness. Don't think it just happened in Jerusalem on that hill on that one day. God has always been standing there saying, I can forgive. Okay? And knowing how dumb we are, there are ways to break a vow. Leviticus 5, 4 through 6 tells how to break that vow if you did something not realizing what was going to happen. I think Jephthah falls under this. Well, I didn't know it was my daughter was going to come out. Okay? But it's costly. He has to go to the high priest. Just like we have to go to Jesus, our high priest, to get forgiveness, Jephthah would have had to go to the high priest, and there was a penalty to be paid. There's also in Leviticus 27, since it was a person that was vowed, in Leviticus 27, there is a way to redeem that person, and it's going to cost a lot of shekels of silver. So Jephthah would have had to pay a lot of money. He would have had to take trespass offerings, which would have been very costly. It would have been very costly for him to do it. I don't think Jephthah really realized it. And I think this goes back to something that we talked about, and we've talked about going all through the book of Judges, is that as Israel drifted away from God and got further and further, they knew enough of the Torah to be extremely dangerous and didn't understand the foundation of it, which was God's care and redemption for people. So they understood enough, just enough of it to know, oh boy, I'm in trouble, but not enough to understand that, yeah, but if I go to God, he'll help me. Just like people can be now. We can understand just enough of the Bible to make us awful and understand how bad we are, but not enough of it to understand that God gives us a way to come out of it. So I think that was part of it. I also think that as a society, they have become so contaminated with all the people around them who human sacrifice was a normal part of doing business. That, yeah, he was sad to lose his daughter. He was sad to lose his only child, but death like that was a normal thing for them. It all falls back to that sin that had polluted the nation and the hearts of everybody there. Even the people who in that moment at that time were righteous in relation to everyone else that God had raised up to do it, they were still so far off the mark that they didn't really comprehend the heart of God and what God was trying to do. So that's why we see this here with Jephthah. And a lot of people have problem with this because Jephthah is in chapter 11 of Hebrews. And he's righteous because of his faith. Which means that thing about you can have the faith of a mustard seed and it be enough. Jephthah obviously is a messed up person. And if Jephthah can be counted as righteous because of his faith, then so can everybody else. So it's a good thing for it's good that God keeps reminding us of people like us in that are in here who have failed miserably, but still come out on the other side, saved by God's grace. Okay? We'll talk about what happens after this with Ephraim. And heard a quote from a friend out of Israel the other day. It was pretty interesting. He said, "Be very careful of people who think you walk on water. They'll be the first ones to drown you in it."